You're listening to the Partisan Comms Podcast.
There is a signal broadcast every second of every day through our television sets.
Welcome to episode 8. Welcome to episode 8. I'm Terrence. Today we're going to talk about a couple of grid down topics. The first is what the effects of a crippling cyber attack on the United States of America might look like. What would happen if a malicious actor or group launched a coordinated and sophisticated cyber attack on the critical infrastructure and systems of the U.S.? How would it affect the economy, society, politics, and security of the nation and the world? And what can we do to prevent or mitigate such a scenario? The second grid down topic is, what could happen if there was an EMP attack on the United States? Recently, I watched a Netflix movie titled Leave the World Behind. The movie is based on a novel by the same title by Ruman Alam. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's a science fiction thriller that explores the themes of family survival in the face of a mysterious and apocalyptic crisis. The movie follows Amanda and Clay, a couple from New York, who take their two children, Rose and Archie, to a luxurious Airbnb house in Long Island for a vacation. Their getaway is interrupted by the introduction of two more characters, George and Ruth, who claim to be the owners of the Airbnb. They claim they have fled from the city because of a massive blackout and a national emergency. They ask to stay in the house with Amanda and Clay until the situation is resolved. Amanda and Clay are skeptical and suspicious of George and Ruth, and tensions arise between the two families. They also have no way of verifying the truth, as their phones, internet, TV, and radio are not working. They are isolated and cut off from the rest of the world. As the movie progresses, strange and alarming events start to happen around them, such as plane crashes, animal migrations, sonic booms, and physical ailments. Eventually, they realize that something catastrophic is happening, but they don't know what it is, who is behind it, or how to escape it. The movie ends with a cliffhanger, as Amanda and Ruth witness explosions in the city from the backyard while Rose finds a DVD of the final season of Friends in the neighbor's bunker. The movie does not offer a clear explanation or resolution for the crisis, leaving the audience to wonder about the fate of the characters in the world.
I would like all of you off of my property. Now.
We're not going anywhere till you give us what we need.
I promised this boy's mother I'd get him some help.
The only thing you're helping him do is a quick death unless you lower your weapons.
Jeez, put the gun down, all right? We'll find another way to the hospital.
There is no other way! Besides, he's not gonna shoot us.
Sounds like he's gonna shoot us.
I'm telling you, he's bluffing.
The fuck I am.
Hold on!
Till I get out of the way!
Dad! Trying to reason with him! The way this ends is if you get back in your vehicle and drive away now.
Drive away to what? All the roads are blocked. We're in the middle of God knows where. There's no one else around. I have no idea what I am supposed to do right now. I can barely do anything without my cell phone and my GPS. I am a useless man. But my son is sick. And my daughter is missing. And I don't know what to do. But you are a very prepared man.
Fuck yeah, I am.
That's right. That's why we came to you, because you're the only one who can help my son.
Not my problem.
No, you're right. It's not. But it's like you said, hey, what would you do if it was your family? That's what I'm doing. It's the only thing I can do. I am begging you, please help my son.
Well, I guess an old-fashioned barter system was to be expected at some point.
It's still cash, so it's not really a barter system.
Hey, I got another tidbit for you. Free of charge if you want it. It's the Koreans behind all this.
Koreans? What makes you say that?
Just trust me. It's the Koreans, or the Chinese, one of them.
Sure. I was driving around yesterday, and it's a big drone dropping these everywhere. It means death to America, so we're thinking Iranians. I remember hearing something on NPR once about their cyber capabilities. Why is that funny?
Before the phones went out, I heard from a friend of mine in San Diego about a similar event, drones dropping pamphlets, except they were in Korean. Or Mandarin. Like I said, he couldn't tell which. But seeing as he did four tours in Iraq, he sure as shit would have known if it looked like that. We made a lot of enemies around the world. Maybe all this means is a few of them teamed up.
I need to know that you're on the level with me. No matter how far this thing goes, I need to know that we're good. Because if what just happened here is happening everywhere, we need to get to that bunker Danny told us about, and we need to get there now.
What are you talking about? You know something.
I had a sneaking suspicion, but I wanted more information first. All the signs were there, sure, but I didn't want to scare anyone. You'd have called me crazy, because it is crazy. It would have made more sense if we were on the brink of an all-out invasion. But this, I didn't think we'd actually let something like this happen. I thought we were smarter than that.
Let what happen?
Because my primary client works in the defense sector, I spent a lot of time studying the cost-benefit analysis of military campaigns. There was one program in particular that terrified my client the most. A simple three-stage maneuver that could topple a country's government from within. First stage was isolation. Disable their communication and transportation. Make the target as deaf, dumb, and paralyzed as possible. Setting them up for the second stage. Synchronized chaos. Terrorize them with covert attacks and misinformation. Overwhelming their defense capabilities, leaving their weapon systems vulnerable to extremists in their own military. Without a clear enemy or motive, people would start turning on each other. Done successfully, the third stage would happen on its own.
What's the third stage?
A coup d'etat. Civil war. Collapse. This program was considered the most cost-effective way to destabilize a country. Because if the target nation was dysfunctional enough, it would, in essence, do the work for you. Whoever started this wants us to finish it.
Although many of the themes detailed in the movie are a work of science fiction, it's not impossible or improbable that the United States could be subjected to a large-scale and sophisticated cyber attack. In fact, many experts and officials have warned that the U.S. is vulnerable to such a cyber attack and that the consequences could be catastrophic. Cyber attacks can have various motives, such as financial gain, political agenda, ideological belief, personal revenge, or simply mischief. Cyber attacks can target different entities, such as individuals, businesses, organizations, governments, or nations. They can have different levels of severity, ranging from minor inconveniences to major disasters. The effects of such a cyber attack could be felt at multiple levels. One of those includes potential economic impacts. A cyber attack on the United States could pose significant economic losses and damages, both direct and indirect. Direct losses and damages include the cost of restoring the system and data, paying the ransoms or fines, compensating the victims, and repairing the infrastructure. Indirect losses and damages include the loss of productivity, revenue, trade, investment, confidence, and reputation. According to some estimates, a cyber attack on the U.S. power grid could cost the economy up to $1 trillion. A cyber attack on the U.S. financial sector could cost the economy up to $15 trillion. And a cyber attack on the U.S. could also affect the global economy, as the U.S. is a major player and partner in the international trade and financial system. A cyber attack on the U.S. could also cause significant social disruptions, both short-term and long-term. Some of the short-term disruptions and harm include the loss of access to essential services, the inability to perform daily activities, the exposure to health and safety risks, and the increase of stress and anxiety. Long-term disruptions could include the loss of trust in the institutions, the erosion of social cohesion, the rise of social unrest and violence, and the decline of well-being and happiness. A cyber attack on the U.S. could also affect the global society, as the U.S. is a leader and model in the promotion of democracy, human rights, and civil liberties. Such an attack on the U.S. could also have significant political implications and consequences, both domestic and international. Domestic implications and consequences include the challenge to the legitimacy and authority of the government, the pressure and criticism from the public and the media, the division and polarization of the political parties and groups, and the demand and expectation for accountability and action. Some international implications and consequences could include the damage to the image and influence of the U.S., the strain or support from the allies and partners, the provocation and deterrence of the enemies and rivals, and the opportunity or necessity for cooperation or confrontation. A cyber attack on the United States could also affect the global order, as the U.S. is a key actor and stakeholder in the maintenance of peace and security, the resolution of conflicts and crises, and the development of norms and rules. A cyber attack on the United States could also pose significant security threats and challenges, both physical and digital. Physical threats and challenges include the possibility of follow-up or concurrent attacks on the military or civilian targets, the vulnerability of the critical infrastructure and systems, the potential of exposing classified or sensitive information and assets, as well as the event leading to the escalation of tension or conflict. Other challenges include mitigating the potential of persistent or recurring cyber attacks, and the level of sophistication or evolution of the methods and techniques in implementing the attack. Before we get into some real-life examples of cyber attacks, it's important to understand what one is. And there's a lot of different types, but from a high level, a cyber attack is any attempt to compromise or disrupt the confidentiality, integrity, or availability of a computer system, network, or data using malicious code, software, or hardware. Some of the common types and methods of cyber attacks include things like malware, which is malicious software that infects a device or system and can perform various harmful actions, such as stealing data, deleting files, encrypting data for ransom, or taking control of the device or system. Phishing is also another type of cyber attack, where a fraudulent email or message that tricks the recipient into clicking on a malicious link or an attachment, or providing sensitive information such as passwords, credit card numbers, or personal data. There's also denial of service, which is a cyber attack that overwhelms a website or service within a large amount of traffic or requests, causing it to slow or become unavailable for legitimate users. There's also a type of cyber attack that intercepts or alters the communication between two parties, such as a user and a website, or a sender and a receiver of an email without their knowledge or consent. There's also cyber attacks that exploit a vulnerability in a database or web application by inserting malicious SQL commands that can access, modify, or delete data, or execute commands on the server. Lastly, there's a type of cyber attack that exploits a previously unknown or unpatched vulnerability in a software or hardware before the vendor or developer can fix it or release a patch. There have been some cybersecurity issues that have been cause for concern over the years, such as the 2003 Sapphire Worm. The reason it was significant is because of how quickly it spread, and it was able to reach approximately 75,000 targets in 10 minutes. It was able to accomplish this by exploiting a security hole in Microsoft SQL Server 2000. It was spread directly through network connections and did not need email as a carrier.
The video games is playing me, facing on a level, but it take you every time on a one-on-one, feeling running down your spine. Nothing's gonna save you one last time, 'cause hit on you through and through.
At just before 9:30 p.m. Pacific time, we saw no infections of Sapphire. Within 30 minutes, we saw 75,000. Most of these infections actually occurred within the first 10 minutes. We created our data using network telescopes. This is the same technique used in the backscatter papers and the code red analysis. That is, we monitor large address ranges for incoming packets, and we either sample or record entire traces. And we used several different address ranges for this analysis. So what was Sapphire? It was a single packet UDP worm that attacked both Microsoft SQL Server and Microsoft SQL Server Desktop Edition, which is a scaled down version of the SQL Server bundled with all sorts of applications. And it was a single packet UDP worm. So the packet, when received, executed the code that cleaned up from the buffer overflow, got a bunch of API pointers. This was all code borrowed from a previous exploit. Creates a socket, seeds the random number generator, and goes into an infinite loop, sending copies of itself to random addresses. The two key features are, this was small. This was a 404-byte packet total. And it achieved worldwide spread in less than 10 minutes. For the first 40 seconds, Sapphire looked like any other scanning worm, code red, etc. It just was very, very fast.
The date banks know my number. Says I gotta pay, 'cause I made it the gray last year. Finny ran the town, you screw. Kick around the world, the rain, the thing, but he can do to you.
In January 2010, inspectors with the UN's Nuclear Monitoring Agency noticed something strange at the nuclear facility in Natanz, Iran. Numerous centrifuges at the crown jewel of Iran's nuclear program were failing. Centrifuges are devices that produce enriched uranium, which can be used to make nuclear weapons. The cause of their failure was a mystery. It's believed the US and Israel ordered a cyber attack to slow down Iran's nuclear program. A computer worm called Stuxnet reportedly traveled on USB thumb drives and spread through Microsoft Windows computers that controlled the centrifuges, sending instructions for them to burn out. Stuxnet didn't simply take over a computer or steal information. It actually caused the equipment to self-destruct. it's more dangerous than a computer virus. While a virus is dormant until the unwitting victim installs it, a worm can spread without being activated. Stuxnet is believed to have been created by the U.S. National Security Agency and Israeli intelligence, though neither has ever admitted responsibility.
Who made you? Nobody told you. Who made you? If you're gonna date me, who pick up the bill and who made who?
A devastating hack, crippling one of the world's most powerful entertainment studios. Sony Pictures Entertainment tells CNN it's still investigating what it calls a very sophisticated cyber attack. The FBI is on the case. Five of its new movies, including Fury and the remake of Annie, were posted on illicit websites. And very sensitive, confidential information started to appear online, including the multi-million dollar salaries of top Sony executives, social security numbers of employees. Some staffers had to work with pen and paper.
These people are prodding and provoking Sony, and they're doing it deliberately. This is not kind of thing where they just want to go in and steal some movies. They're trying to stick it to Sony and to particular Sony executives.
A group calling itself the Guardians of Peace has claimed responsibility for the hack, but it's not clear if that group was really behind it. A source at Sony tells us the company is looking into the possibility that hackers working for North Korea could be behind the attack.
And nobody told you.
More than 21 million Americans had personal information stolen from government files in a data breach that was six times as large as originally disclosed. The information was hacked from the Office of Personnel Management, or OPM, which said today it is highly likely that anyone who went through background checks to apply for a government position since 2000 was affected. In terms of scope, we know this is huge, but how is it different from the earlier hacks we've heard about, Josh?
Well, what we're finding out now is not only were many more Americans affected than we previously knew, but just what kinds of data. We're talking about very personal data that most people will be very uncomfortable knowing is out there. We're talking about people's health histories, their criminal histories, their educational and residency backgrounds, as well as interviews that they conducted with members of OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, or other people conducting background checks in the process of applications to get a security clearance.
In fact, all the kinds of information that we're warned to protect with our lives, social security numbers, biometric fingerprints.
That's right, as well as usernames and passwords that a lot of these applicants used as they were trying to get their applications.
How was this discovered?
Well, it was discovered by a system that the government had put in place to try and detect in breaches just like this one. Unfortunately, that system was not the most modern system, and it did not detect it until it was quite a bit too late.
The satellites send me pictures. They see in the eye, take it to the white, it's spinning like a dynamo. Feel it going around, round. Running out the chips, you got no lying in town. So don't look down, no. Whoa.
Last weekend, parts of the Ukrainian capital, Kiev, went dark. Russia appears to have figured out how to crash a power grid with a click.
Nearly a quarter of a million people lost power in this small Ukrainian city when it was targeted by a suspected Russian attack last December. Vasyl Pemchuk is the electric control center manager and told us when hackers took over their computers, all his workers could do was film it with their cell phones. It was illogical and chaotic, he told us. It seemed like something in a Hollywood movie. The hackers sent emails with infected attachments to power company employees, stealing their login credentials and then taking control of the grid systems to cut the circuit breakers at nearly 60 substations.
Now, with that massive security breach possibly putting 143 million Americans at risk, hackers targeting credit monitoring company Equifax, and now the FBI is investigating.
This is one of the largest data breaches in history. It happened at Equifax, the company that tracks all your credit cards and mortgages to determine your credit score. Half of all Americans potentially exposed, their highly sensitive personal information now in the hands of hackers.
Nobody told you. What's your assessment of this breach of U.S. government agencies?
Quite serious. I mean, what we have here is we have a supply chain attack. So a very popular product that the Fortune 500, U.S. government agencies like the White House, Department of Justice, the Pentagon, I mean, it's widespread, the number of customers that use the SolarWinds Orion product. And what the threat actors did in this case is they were able to modify the update. So a lot of these updates are applied automatically, and the threat actors were able to get the signing keys to cryptographically sign the update so it would be accepted. And once this update was installed, it installed malware that gave the threat actors complete access to that organization's internal network. And then they're able to install other backdoors, move laterally, steal information, gain access to email, pretty much do anything they want on the network. And this is super sophisticated because they had really good operation security. For example, if they were going to connect to a victim's network, they would do it from IP addresses in the same city. So it would look like a normal employee accessing the network. So very clever. It speaks to a nation state, and I don't know what nation state it is. I think that's still trying, I still think they're investigating whether it's Russia, could be Iran, could be China. I guess time will tell and we'll find out. So again, very sophisticated, excellent tradecraft, and we should all be concerned about this attack, because imagine an attacker, a nation state, breaks into Microsoft. Well, they could do the same type of attack, another supply chain attack, and actually backdoor Microsoft products or any type of products in the supply chain. So it's extremely difficult for companies to detect.
The biggest fuel pipeline system in the United States remains crippled by a cyber attack that's being called the worst of its kind in the U.S. The Colonial Pipeline ships more than 2.5 million barrels of oil a day from the Gulf Coast to the East Coast, but it has been shut down since Friday. Today, emergency powers were invoked to try to avoid fuel shortages.
The 2003 Sapphire worm caused denial of service, which basically renders a service inaccessible, caused slowdowns, and crashed routers worldwide. It disabled bank ATMs, caused network outages, canceled airline flights, and interfered with elections. So, it's not beyond the realm of possibility a state actor would leverage similar methods to create enough confusion among the target population that the recipient of the attack would have to divert significant resources to counter these events as they unfold, leaving them vulnerable for other imminent attacks. The 2010 Stuxnet worm that targeted the nuclear program of Iran sabotaged the centrifuges that were used to enrich uranium. The attack was believed to be a joint operation by the U.S. and Israel as part of a covert campaign to delay or prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. It was discovered by Iranian authorities in June of 2010, but not publicly revealed until September. The attack was considered one of the first examples of cyber warfare, as it used a cyber weapon to cause physical damage to a critical infrastructure. The 2014 Sony Pictures cyber attack leaked confidential information and threatened to cancel the release of a movie that mocked the North Korean leader. Some of the leaked data include personal information, emails, scripts, contracts, and unreleased movies. The attack was claimed by a group that called themselves the Guardians of Peace, which demanded that Sony cancel the release of a comedy film called The Interview, which depicted a fictional assassination plot against the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. The attack was widely suspected to be sponsored by North Korea, although the country denied any involvement. It caused significant financial and reputational losses for Sony, as well as diplomatic tensions between the U.S. and North Korea. The Office of Personnel Management data breach in 2015 exposed the sensitive information of approximately 21 million current and former federal employees, contractors, as well as their families. The information included personal, financial, health, and security clearance data, as well as fingerprints. The data breach was attributed to a Chinese state-sponsored group and was discovered by OPM in April 2015, and it was considered one of the most damaging and embarrassing cyber attacks on the U.S. government, as it exposed the identities and backgrounds of millions of people who work or have worked for the government, including those with access to classified information. The attack on the Ukrainian power grid in 2015, as well as 2016, caused blackouts and affected hundreds of thousands of customers. The 2017 Equifax data breach affected one of the largest credit reporting agencies in the United States. Personal information of about 147 million Americans was exposed, as well as some Canadians and Britons. The information included names, social security numbers, birth dates, addresses, driver's licenses, as well as credit card numbers. The breach was caused by a failure to patch a known vulnerability in a web application framework, and the breach resulted in multiple lawsuits, investigations, and resignations, as well as a loss of trust and reputation for Equifax. The attack on SolarWinds in 2020 compromised the software provider and its customers, including several U.S. government agencies and private companies, and exposed sensitive data and secrets. SolarWinds is a major software company based in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the attack was attributed to a Russian state-sponsored group, and it compromised the software updates of SolarWinds, which is used by thousands of customers, including government agencies, corporations, and nonprofits. The attackers were able to gain access to the networks and data of these customers, including the Department of Homeland Security, Department of Defense, Department of Justice, Department of Energy, the Treasury Department, and many others. This attack was considered one of the most sophisticated and widespread cyber espionage campaigns ever conducted against the United States government. Our final example is the attack on the Colonial Pipeline in 2021, which disrupted the supply of fuel to the eastern United States and caused panic and price hikes among customers. Those are just a few examples of cyber attacks that have happened in the past, but what if a future cyber attack was more devastating and widespread? What are some hypothetical worst-case scenarios of a crippling cyber attack on the United States? Suppose a hostile nation state or a terrorist group decides to launch a cyber attack on the U.S. as a form of retaliation or intimidation. And suppose the power grid, transportation system, communication networks, the financial sector, healthcare systems, and the departments within the federal government are all targeted at once. What if a combination of methods such as malware, ransomware, denial of service, phishing, and sabotage to infiltrate, disrupt, damage, or destroy the systems and data are all part of a coordinated attack? What if the timing and execution of the attack maximizes the impact and chaos, and it happens without warning and lasts for hours, days, or even weeks? The result is likely a massive and unprecedented disruption of the normal functioning of the United States society and economy. Millions of people lose access to electricity, water, gas, internet, phone, television, radio, and other essential services. Millions are unable to travel, work, study, shop, or access healthcare. Millions of dollars are lost or stolen from bank accounts, businesses, and organizations. Sensitive information and secrets are exposed or erased from government and private databases. The U.S. government and military are unable to communicate, coordinate, or respond effectively. This could also result in the U.S. public and media becoming very confused, scared, angry, and helpless. The U.S. allies and enemies are shocked, concerned, or opportunistic, and the U.S. adversaries claim responsibility or deny involvement and issue demands or threats. The U.S. would face a national emergency and global crisis if this were ever to come to fruition. Welcome to episode... Today we're going to talk about...
Director Christopher Wray sounding the alarm over China. Let's listen.
That threaten American safety and prosperity. Before I go on, I do want to make very clear that my comments today are not about the Chinese people, and certainly not about Chinese Americans who contribute much to our country and are frankly often the victims of Chinese Communist Party aggression themselves. Rather, when I talk about the threat posed by China, I mean the government of China, in particular led by the CCP. The CCP's dangerous actions, China's multi-pronged assault on our national and economic security, make it the defining threat of our generation. Now, when I described the CCP as a threat to American safety a moment ago, I meant that quite literally. There has been far too little public focus on the fact that PRC hackers are targeting our critical infrastructure, our water treatment plants, our electrical grid, our oil and natural gas pipelines, our transportation systems, and the risk that poses to every American requires our attention now. China's hackers are positioning on American infrastructure in preparation to wreak havoc and cause real-world harm to American citizens and communities if and when China decides the time has come to strike. They're not focused just on political and military targets. We can see from where they position themselves across civilian infrastructure that low blows aren't just a possibility in the event of a conflict. Low blows against civilians are part of China's plan. But the PRC's cyber onslaught goes way beyond pre-positioning for future conflict. Today, and literally every day, they're actively attacking our economic security, engaging in wholesale theft of our innovation and our personal and corporate data. Nor is cyber the only PRC threat we face. The PRC cyber threat is made vastly more dangerous by the way they knit cyber into a whole of government campaign against us.
When I was hacking, if I wanted to gain access to a secure company, I wouldn't go kick the front door down. I would target people I know who have access, who I know bring personal devices into a building, or who do things that are adjacent to the sensitive stuff, and I would then work my way up. The kind of things that are vulnerable to ransomware attacks is literally everything that is connected to anything. In the old days, for a country to cause disruption to a country as big as the United States, you'd need millions and millions of dollars worth of investment to do something. But today, you just need a few thousand dollars and a laptop and a couple of smart hackers to write some code and send something out. Traditionally, a black hat hacker is one who is not bound by any kind of ethical code, willing to break the law, and is in it for specifically his own purposes. I, at one time, considered myself a black hat and changed to a white hat. White hats tend to be hackers who are bound by an ethical code, who try to do things to improve the greater good, and who are bound by the law. So I look for vulnerabilities in systems that haven't been scrutinized before.
But they are still investigating what's going on. AT&T customers seem to be facing widespread issues. The company just acknowledged to CNN they're experiencing disruptions to its network, saying, quote, "We are working urgently to restore service to them." What is the latest on these outages and the disruptions?
As of right now, we've seen tens of thousands of user reports on the website downdetector.com, mostly from AT&T customers saying they're having trouble placing calls, not having service. And we've seen numerous reports from emergency services around the country saying you may have trouble reaching 911 if you're an AT&T customer. That you either use a different phone from another network to try and call 911 if you need to do so. All of this seems to be unfolding across the country. Signal on their phones, particularly on AT&T. Now AT&T says it is tracking this issue and working. At least according to these companies that you're trying.
This is an emergency alert system broadcast from the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. This is a critical message regarding the current state of telecommunications and internet connectivity across the United States. We regret to inform you that multiple states across the country have experienced widespread and continuous cyber attacks targeting telecommunications infrastructure, Wi-Fi networks, and internet connections. These attacks have resulted in the loss of communication services for millions of Americans. This interruptive broadcast is being carried out in coordination with the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, as many news networks have also been compromised, affecting their ability to broadcast critical information. Critical infrastructure sectors, including transportation, financial services, and public sector services, are under threat. Reports indicate that numerous stock exchanges have been targeted, leading to disruptions in the economy. In light of these developments, we urge all citizens.
They recruit human sources to target our businesses using insiders to steal the same kinds of innovation and data that their hackers are targeting. All levels of the U.S. government, especially the NSA, Cyber Command, CISA, and ONCD, whose leaders I'm honored to be here with today. In fact, just this morning, we announced an operation where we and our partners identified hundreds of routers that had been taken over by the PRC state-sponsored hacking group known as Volt Typhoon.
We interrupt this program. This is a national emergency. Important instructions will follow. The following message is transmitted at the request of the United States government. This is not a test. A nuclear attack was commenced against the United States. 15 nuclear bombs have detonated in several areas across the country. They include Baltimore, Boston, Chicago, Denver, Detroit, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, New York, Pennsylvania, Portland, Maine, Portland, Oregon, San Francisco, San Diego, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. At this time, all residents within a 400-mile radius of these areas should seek a...
This is an emergency alert system broadcast from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. This message is to clarify that there is no nuclear attack against the United States. The previous broadcasts indicating such an attack were false and the result of hackers attempting to infiltrate television networks across the United States. We want to assure all citizens that there is no immediate threat of nuclear war or any other catastrophic event. The real emergency we are facing is the ongoing cyber attack orchestrated by cyber terrorists who have compromised television networks, satellites, and other critical infrastructure. Reports indicate that hackers have infiltrated satellite systems, leading to disruptions in communication and potentially affecting GPS navigation and other satellite-dependent services. Additionally, power grids in Canada have reported major failures, which may be linked to the cyber attacks. Financial systems have been targeted, with reports of cyber attacks on banking systems and other financial institutions. We strongly advise everyone to refrain from accessing the internet as it is currently unsafe. Major social media outlets are down, and browsing engines have been compromised, posing a significant risk to personal data, including bank accounts. It is essential to remain vigilant and cautious during this time. Avoid sharing sensitive information online and refrain from conducting financial transactions until the situation is resolved. Emergency response teams are working diligently to mitigate the effects of these cyber attacks.
May be false or manipulated to serve the agenda of these malevolent actors. Do not trust any of your safety may depend.
Cyber attacks have escalated beyond our control, and chaos is spreading rapidly across the United
States. Red riots have erupted across the city.
Large-scale invasion and landing of armed forces on both the west and east coasts of the United States. The nature and origin of this invasion remain unknown at this time. Witnesses have described the invaders as deploying amphibious landing craft and utilizing a in place and
take immediate action to protect themselves and their loved ones in light.
The Volk Typhoon malware enabled China to hide, among other things, pre-operational reconnaissance and network exploitation against critical infrastructure like our communications, energy, transportation, and water sectors. Steps China was taking, in other words, to find and prepare to destroy or degrade the civilian critical infrastructure that keeps us safe and prosperous. And let's be clear, cyber threats to our critical infrastructure represent real-world threats to our physical safety.
No one would have thought that a ransomware attack against someone like the Colonial Pipeline would cripple large amounts of the United States, but it did, because the supply chain dependency on that fuel caused a cascade problem throughout the whole of the US. Recently, we saw an attack against a company that supplies a lot of security providers, and it happened because of a vulnerability that was in the process of being fixed.
I do not want those watching today to think we can't protect ourselves. But I do want the American people to know that we cannot afford to sleep on this danger. As a government and a society, we've got to remain vigilant and actively defend against the threat that Beijing poses. Otherwise, China has shown it will make us pay. Thank you, and look forward to today's discussion. Thank you. This is only going to get bigger, and I don't think we have to worry too much about our, you know, nuclear arsenal being taken over movie style and used against us. But I do think we have to worry about things like major impacts to financial markets or potential impacts to things like electricity production facilities.
There are many possible scenarios where bad actors could target either specific or multiple parts of our infrastructure. But how would the government, the military, the private sector, and the public react and cope with such a crisis? What can we do to prevent or mitigate such a disaster from happening in the first place? And how vulnerable are we to these cyber attacks, especially when it comes to our critical infrastructure? These are difficult questions to answer because there are so many variables and uncertainties involved. However, let's imagine a high-level overview of what could happen based on some assumptions and estimates. Of course, this isn't a prediction or a forecast, but rather a hypothetical exercise to illustrate the potential consequences and challenges of such a cyber attack. The unfortunate truth is that we are very vulnerable to these attacks, and our infrastructure is constantly under threat from various actors such as nation-states, terrorist groups, criminal organizations, as well as lone hackers. Our infrastructure is composed of various sectors that are essential for the functioning of our society and economy, such as energy, water, transportation, communications, health, finance, and so on. These sectors rely heavily on information and communication technologies, such as computers, networks, sensors, controllers, and software, to operate and coordinate their services. However, these technologies also introduce new risks and vulnerabilities that can be exploited by cyber attackers who can cause significant damage, disruption, or harm to our infrastructure and consequently to our national security and public safety. So let's assume a cyber attack is launched by either a hostile nation state such as Russia, China, Iran, or North Korea, or a proxy group acting on their behalf with the intention of causing maximum damage and disruption to the United States and possibly triggering a conflict. We'll also assume the cyber attack is coordinated and synchronized, targeting multiple sectors and regions at the same time, and exploiting multiple vulnerabilities and methods, such as malware, phishing, denial of service, SQL injection, zero-day exploit, and so on. Additionally, the cyber attack is sophisticated and persistent, meaning the attackers have access to advanced tools and techniques, and then that they can evade or overcome the detection and defense mechanisms of the targets, and that they can maintain or regain access to the compromised systems and networks even after the initial attack. The effects of such a cyber attack would be devastating and far-reaching, affecting every aspect of our society and economy. Some of those possible effects may include a coordinated and sophisticated attack on the power grid, targeting power plants, hydroelectric generators, transmission lines, as well as various distribution networks. This attack would cause a widespread and prolonged power outage, affecting millions of customers across the country and disrupting the supply and distribution of electricity. The outage could last for hours, days, or even weeks, depending on the extent of the damage and availability of backup power sources. The power outage could also affect other sectors that depend on electricity, such as water, transportation, communications, health, finance, and so on, creating a cascading effect of failures and disruptions. A well-coordinated attack could also cause water shortages, affecting the availability and quantity and quality of drinking water and wastewater services. The water shortage could result from the loss of power, the loss of control, or the contamination of the water systems and networks. A water shortage could pose serious health and environmental risks, such as dehydration, disease, pollution, and fire. Another potential target could include the transportation system, targeting air traffic control systems, railway signaling, traffic lights, and various transportation control systems. The attack could disrupt public transportation across the country, lasting for several hours or days, and affect millions of people, businesses, and organizations who face delays, cancellations, or accidents in their travel plans, and also endangering the safety and security of the passengers and cargo, causing injuries, deaths, or losses. The attack could paralyze America's mobility and logistics and impact the supply chain and the delivery of goods and services. A well-coordinated attack could also affect the access and reliability of phone, internet, radio, television, and satellite services. A communication breakdown could result from the loss of power, loss of control, or the interference of the communication systems and networks, such as routers, servers, cables, antennas, satellites, and GPS. The communication breakdown could hamper the coordination and response of the authorities, the media, and the public, and create misinformation, confusion, and panic. Finally, a well-planned attack could include affecting the delivery and quality of healthcare services and products. A health crisis could result from a loss of power or compromise the health systems and networks, such as hospitals, clinics, pharmacies, laboratories, and medical devices. A crippling cyber attack on the United States could have devastating and far-reaching effects on the nation and the world. It's a scenario that we should not take lightly or ignore. It's also a scenario that our society should be prepared to face. Another grid-down scenario that has been in and out of the news over the past several years is what the effects of an EMP would have on a population. An EMP, or electromagnetic pulse, is a burst of intense electromagnetic energy that can damage or destroy electronic devices and systems. An EMP can be caused by natural phenomena such as solar flares or lightning strikes, or by man-made sources such as nuclear weapons or specialized devices. In the case of an adversary, an EMP attack could be caused by detonating a nuclear weapon high above the atmosphere, creating a powerful EMP that covers a large area of the country.
The city doesn't know what's coming. She doesn't feel the heat. The city won't know what hit her, what knocked her out into the street. This city's thinking that it's over, and she's already fast asleep. So I'm breaking out of here tonight. Now am I ready?
In 2019, a coalition of energy organizations and government entities called the Electric Power Research Institute, or EPRI, funded a study to try and understand exactly what could happen to the power grid from a high-altitude nuclear EMP.
We're giving only what we need, only the chance to survive. And even then, it's a cone toss, a roll of the dice. There's gotta be something better, something that feels more alive. So I'm breaking out of here tonight. I'm breaking out of here.
Much of the northeastern United States is without power tonight. Millions and millions of people in big cities and suburbs from New York to Detroit and in Canada were caught by surprise in the middle or late afternoon when the electrical grid suddenly crashed, stopping everything that depends on electricity to run. Here in New York City, the only thing to do was walk. Workers, those not trapped in buildings, high-rise or otherwise, or subways, flooded into the streets trying to make their way home. Post 9/11, the first thing everybody asked was, is terrorism behind this?
And do you think that there is any way for the plants to protect themselves against EMPs, or is it just like everything going to shut down?
No, there are, yes, there are some things, some hardware modifications that can be put in place to make some of the equipment that you're counting on to be more resilient in case of an EMP threat.
All right. And are the plants doing those things currently?
Yes, I don't know the complete status of the whole industry. It comes a little bit more from the transmission and distribution side in terms of the grid being resilient, if you will. I think the plants were evaluated to be relatively resilient, but the grid, I believe, was the weak point. And I know that they have looked at specific modifications that could be done to protect the grid. I don't know the status in terms of how far along they are, though.
The engine's running, baby. We don't have time for goodbyes. I know you can't come with me. I see that look in your eyes. So kiss me fast, cause there's no time to lose. Leave the light on, I'll come back for you. Never say you said, I swear I'm gonna make it right.
The first part of an EMP is called E1. This is the extremely fast and intense pulse that immediately follows detonation. The gamma rays released during any nuclear detonation collide with electrons, ionizing atoms, and creating a burst of electromagnetic radiation. That's generally bad on its own, but when detonated high in the atmosphere, Earth's magnetic field interacts with those free electrons to produce a significantly stronger electromagnetic pulse than if detonated within the denser air at lower altitudes. The E1 pulse comes and goes within a few nanoseconds, and the energy is somewhat jokingly referred to as DC to daylight, meaning it's spread across a huge part of the electromagnetic spectrum. The E-1 pulse generally reaches anywhere within a line of sight of the detonation, and for a high-altitude burst, this can cover an enormous area of land. At the height of the Yucca test, that's a circle with an area larger than Texas. A weapon at 200 kilometers in altitude could impact a significant fraction of North America. But not everywhere within that circle experiences the strongest fields. In general, the further from the blast you are, the lower the amplitude of the EMP. But because of Earth's magnetic field, the maximum amplitude occurs a little bit south of ground zero in the northern hemisphere, creating this pattern called a smile diagram.
Five-hour traffic delays and bridges from Detroit to Canada are reportedly gridlocked. In Erie, Pennsylvania, rolling blackouts have caused a chaotic rush hour. Even Governor Ed Rendell visiting the city was stranded in traffic. In Cleveland, University Hospital was operating in disaster mode. No staff could leave. A nurse in the labor room said they were without air conditioning and, quote, our laboring moms are suffering.
The E2 pulse is slower than E1 because it's generated in a totally different way, this time from the interaction of gamma rays and neutrons. It turns out that an E2 pulse is roughly comparable to a lightning strike. In fact, many lightning strikes are more powerful than those that could be generated by high-altitude nuclear detonations. Of course, the grid's not entirely immune to lightning, but we do use lots of lightning protection technology.
Sometimes I just wanna drive to the streets running. I wanna burn until there's nothing left to burn about. This city's waiting for a better day. When I get back, there will be hell to pay.
In Hartford, Connecticut, power has been flashing in and out. 40 trains in the state are stranded between stations. Akron, Ohio is without power, and four nuclear plants in Ohio and New York have been shut down. Every prison in New York State reported a loss of power and switched to backup generators. Air travel in the Northeast has ground to a halt, causing disruptions across the country. Airports in New York, Cleveland, Detroit, Ottawa, and Toronto have grounded flights, causing a snowball effect of delays. The FAA says air traffic control centers are still in business, some on backup diesel generators. The problem is with electricity out at some airports, X-ray machines and scanners aren't working, and it's impossible for screeners to check passengers. Finally, the New York Stock Exchange managed to shut down before the blackout, but officials could not say whether the markets will open normally tomorrow.
The final component of an EMP, called E3, is again much different than the other two. It's really not even a pulse at all because it's generated in an entirely different way. When a nuclear detonation happens in the upper atmosphere, Earth's magnetic field is disturbed and distorted. As the blast dissipates, the magnetic field slowly returns to its original state over the course of a few minutes. This is similar to what happens when a geomagnetic storm on the sun disrupts Earth's gravity, and large solar events could potentially be a bigger threat than a nuclear EMP to the grid.
An EMP attack would have devastating consequences for the United States and its population. It would knock out the power grid, communications networks, transportation systems, and other critical infrastructure. It would send the country back to the pre-industrial era with no electricity, internet, no phones, cars, planes, trains, or running water. It would also cause widespread panic, chaos, and violence as millions of people struggle to survive without the basic necessities of life. One of the most popular and influential books that depicts an EMP scenario is titled One Second After by William R. Forsten. The book tells the story of a retired Army colonel and history professor who lives in a small town in North Carolina. Following an EMP attack, the small community has to face the harsh realities of life after an EMP attack that cripples the nation. The book is a sobering illustration of how an EMP attack would affect various aspects of society, such as food supply, medical care, law and order, military defense, and human behavior. The book is also based on extensive research and consultation with experts on EMPs and its effects, and is also endorsed by prominent figures such as Newt Gingrich. The book has been praised for its realism, accuracy, and emotional impact, and has also been criticized for its political bias, religious views, and graphic violence. It's also inspired a lot of people to become more aware and prepared for an EMP scenario, and has sparked a debate on how to prevent or mitigate such a threat. Some of the possible mitigation solutions include things like hardening or shielding critical electronic devices and systems from EMP damage, developing backup or alternative power sources and communications methods, creating contingency plans and emergency protocols for various sectors and agencies, stockpiling food, water, medicine, and other essential supplies, as well as building community resilience and cooperation. After such an attack, with communications networks down, anyone who possessed amateur radio equipment could be among the few with the ability to share information and pass emergency traffic. But what would happen to HF radio waves during a nuclear explosion? Such an attack would certainly affect HF radio waves in various ways. HF radio waves are radio waves with frequencies between 3 and 30 megahertz. They are used by amateur radio operators to communicate with each other over long distances and across borders. HF radio waves rely on the ionosphere, which is a layer of the atmosphere that reflects radio waves back to the Earth. An EMP attack would have some effects on the ionosphere and those HF radio waves. This isn't an exhaustive explanation of everything that would happen to HF radio waves, but from a high level and from what I've read, it would create a temporary blackout of HF radio communication in the affected area, and that's because the EMP would ionize the lower layers of the atmosphere, creating a dense layer of electrons that would absorb HF radio waves instead of reflecting them. This effect would last for several minutes to hours because the EMP would ionize the lower layers of the atmosphere, creating a dense layer of electrons that would absorb HF radio waves instead of reflecting them. This effect could last for several minutes to hours after the EMP blast. Second, it would create a long-term degradation of HF radio propagation in the affected area. The EMP would disrupt the ionosphere's normal structure and composition, creating irregularities and fluctuations that would scatter HF radio waves instead of reflecting them, and this effect would possibly last for several days to weeks after the blast. As a result, an EMP attack would make HF radio communications very difficult or impossible in the affected area for a certain period of time. However, HF radio communications may still be possible in other areas that are not affected by the EMP blast or its aftermath. Moreover, HF radio communications may gradually recover in the affected area as the ionosphere returns to its normal state. Anyway, that's all for this episode. Thank you for listening, and if you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, or write a review.
There is a signal broadcast every second of every day through our television sets.
Mark my words, AI is far more dangerous than nukes.
Science and technology are propelling us forward at accelerating rates.
Engines throttling up, three engines now at 104%.